106.6.
Okay, that was Grace Jones with Slave to the Rhythm, as heard at the Jubilee concert last week, which for me was the only thing worth watching. The whole Jubilee thing, we got a spare day out of it, so, you know, yeah, it's not all bad. Anyway, I'm Don Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, there's some news, plus the charts, and a look at what's new on TV. And DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go there now. If you can do that while listening to this, that is. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, get in touch via the Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. From time to time, I will cough during the show. So, in the first hour, it's all about films. And, well, the first thing I'm going to review, we'll always start with a review, but I'm going to review something that's actually been on TV, technically, but it's out on Blu-ray now, and it's basically Jean-Hugues Anglade and co. Excel in Braquo Season 1 on Blu-ray. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then we have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, including Rock of Ages and a re-release for Jaws. And also look at the new Blu-ray and DVDs out this week, including The Muppets. Oh, and J. Edgar, which does look interesting. So, to the review for Braquo. And basically, it's the first season of Braquo, a.k.a. Heist, begins. Farid Benaissa is a prisoner denying that he and his friend raped a pregnant woman. He also refuses to give up his friend's name, so cop Max Rossi, played by Olivier Rabourdin, takes it out on him by stabbing him in the eye with a pen. And that was just the start. Meanwhile, armed gunmen want a high-up civil servant to find out and tell them when and where a mutual friend will be when he arrives in Paris. Otherwise, they'll just release the very compromising photos they've taken of him in a setup. Excuse me. Must be the weather. The powers that be want to make an example of Max, because the bosses have been after him for ages. In fact, they're pretty much all dirty, corrupt cops who'll bend the rules to get the job done, such as keeping some of the money they find on Serge Lemoyne when they arrest him. Max is now disgraced, his widow will not get any of his pension, and Vanessa is unlikely to change his story. Excuse me. So how do Eddie Kaplan, Jean-Hugues Anglade, and his team turn things around? How far will they cross the line to solve cases in their own maverick way? And how will those at the top, who sniff that they're not exactly on the level, try to take them down? That probably sounds like, you know, two completely cliché sentences, but it's a simple way of defining the boundaries between the cops who really should all be on the same side, and it's a wholly priceless piece of entertainment. In addition, the cops have complex private lives which spill over onto the job, and all the characters are nicely fleshed out the more you get into it. Other gripping storylines include trying to pay off a couple of gangsters known as the Hoffman Brothers with money and a portion of cocaine, which originally came from another bust, and a gang who are going around stealing cashpoint machines. In fact, Braquo features sharp writing, which makes you even care about the characters you've only just met, and who have an engaging tale to tell, even if they only have a short time on screen. There's fantastic acting from the entire cast, who manage to combine looking tired, fed up, bored, and simply cool as hell all in one moment. And finally, credit goes to the expert direction, which just oozes atmosphere. Presented in the original 16:9 ratio, the picture perfectly captures the filthy-looking police station and the grim local streets of Paris, with the latter also being made to look stylish at times, given the direction. The sound is in Dolby Pro Logic, and it's fine for what it does, getting across the dialogue, even though I need subtitles to understand it, assorted gunfire, and plenty of atmosphere. Sadly, though, there are no extras on this release, so technically the overall score loses points for that, but realistically, you're getting 8 episodes of quality entertainment for around about £15 on Blu-ray. So there's no argument, really. Just go out and buy it. In fact, if you wait until next week, Season 2 is out as well, which I've not seen at this point in time, but I want to get that for review as well, because I've just loved Season 1 so much. Naturally, of course, with a release like this, there are subtitles in English, which are burnt into the print. So if you're French and have bought this, then you'll find you can't switch them off, which is a bit odd. I mean, normally, they make them an option. There's no reason to make them permanent, really. But chapters are pretty thin on the ground, with just 6 for every sort of 52-minute episode. So the scores, well, overall, it's just for the programme, it's just 10 out of 10. Picture is 10. Sound is 7. It doesn't have any issues whatsoever. Extras, zero, obviously. But overall, it's just, forget the overall score. It's just unmissable. I say it's £15. Just go out and buy it today. It's just brilliant. Okay, before we go to the movie charts, we're going to have a bit of music, and this comes from Wilmslow-born model and singer Katie Coffey. And I do like this. Normally I don't like most dance tracks that get in the charts, but this one really grabbed me. So it's by Katie Coffey, and it's called Hey Baby. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Katie Coffey with Hey Baby, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we're going to go through the top 10 movie charts, and as I've said before, I go through the US movie charts here. Number one, we've got Snow White and the Huntsman, which has taken $56.2 million in its opening week. And Snow White is the only person in the land fairer than the Evil Queen. Unable to tolerate the insult to her vanity, the Evil Queen decides that Snow White must die. The Queen sends a huntsman to kill Snow White. However, he finds himself unable to murder the innocent young woman, and instead ends up training her to become a warrior capable of threatening the Queen's reign. Now, starring Kristen Stewart as a 12-year-old boy, I mean Snow White, plus Chris Hemsworth as the Huntsman, with Charlize Theron, Ian McShane, Bob Hoskins, Ray Winstone, Nick Frost, Eddie Marsden, and Toby Jones. This trailer just sent me into a coma quicker than eating a poison apple. There's just too much Snow White around at the moment, and with the equally dreadful looking Mirror Mirror that's been on the cinema already, and there's also some dross on Channel 5 as well. Just why do these things always just come in droves? I don't know. Just give that one a miss. Number two, we've got Men in Black 3, which has taken $28.1 million this week, and overall $111 million. And an agent criminal kills the young Agent K in 1969, altering the timeline and changing the agency and placing the Earth in danger. Veteran Agent J, Will Smith, must travel back in time to 1969 to before the murder and work with the young Agent K, Josh Brolin, to save him, as well as the agency, the Earth, and humanity himself. Also starring Tommy Lee Jones for about 5 minutes, and as Mark Kermode put it, this is a sequel that no one was waiting for. Since, I mean, I thought the first film was brilliant, the second was rubbish, and the trailer for this just doesn't grab me at all. It's, I don't know, Will Smith's just the same in everything. I've just had enough of it, basically. If I can get it for review when it comes out on Blu-ray, then I'll give it a watch, but otherwise I'm not really going to rush to see it. Number three, we've got Avengers Assemble, which has taken $553 million to date. It's a film that would originally have been called The Avengers, but they didn't want to cause confusion between this and the British TV series from the 60s. And there's something about it all that just doesn't really appeal to me, like a lot of superhero films, although I'm told it does do the necessary for non-superhero fans. That said, I doubt it's something I'll rush to the cinema to see unless Scarlett Johansson turns up personally in a catsuit to escort me to the cinema, which is probably pretty much unlikely. Number four, we've got Battleship, which took a long time to come out in the US because it was out in the UK a little while ago. It's that one based on the game, but with aliens coming to Earth and starring Liam Neeson and Rihanna, and doesn't grab me. Number five, we've got The Dictator, which says it's the true, no, the heroic story of a dictator who risks his life to ensure that democracy would never come to the country he so lovingly oppressed. A new Sacha Baron Cohen vehicle, also starring Megan Fox, Anna Faris, Ben Kingsley and John C. Reilly. I didn't laugh once during the trailer, and I haven't actually seen any of Sacha's films, although from the clips I've seen, only Borat is the one which interests me. It's just that all the supposedly comedic moments we see here either fall flat or are just signposted well in advance. So he's clearly just trading on his name alone. Which makes you think, how long is it going to be before British movie comedy falls so far that they resort to making a film with Keith Lemon? Ugh. Please, God, no. Number six, we've got The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Number seven, we've got What to Expect When You're Expecting, which it's inspired by the perennial New York Times bestseller of the same name. And it says it's hilarious and heartfelt big-screen comedy about five couples whose intertwined lives are turned upside down by the challenges of impending parenthood. And I just think, I mean, it's got Cameron Diaz, Jennifer Lopez, Elizabeth Banks, Chase Crawford, Brooklyn Decker, Anna Kendrick, Matthew Morrison, Dennis Quaid, Chris Rock and Rodrigo Santoro, and it just looks like a typical chick flick to me, just, or maybe something for broody women, just nothing I particularly want to see anyway. Number eight, we've got Dark Shadows, which it's directed by Tim Burton, so unsurprisingly it's got Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter. There's also Michelle Pfeiffer, Eva Green, Johnny Lee Miller and Chloe Grace Moretz, as well as Christopher Lee and Alice Cooper playing himself. Now, I'm not one for Tim Burton movies in general, and I generally find them quite so-so, but this one still does seem intriguing to a degree. So, you know, if I get it, again, it's not something I'm going to go see at the cinema now. If I can get it on Blu-ray, I'll have a watch of that, but I'm not in a big rush, quite frankly. It's also got Eva Green, who looks pretty good in it anyway, basically it's based on the trailer. Number 9, we've got Chernobyl Diaries, which has taken $14.5 million in total so far. And it's centred around a group of 6 young vacationers who, looking to go off the beaten path, hire an extreme tour guide. Ignoring warnings, he takes them into the city of Pripyat, the former home to the workers of the Chernobyl nuclear reactor. But it's now a deserted town since the disaster more than 25 years ago. Now, I went to Russia for a week in 1986 while I was still at school. I came home about 2 weeks before the Chernobyl incident happened. I've read a great deal about it since, though, so I'm always massively interested to find out more about it. And while the film stars no one famous, it just looks fantastic stuff. Yes, it's one of those films where people get, you know, killed off one by one, which isn't original, but I mean, that's how it appears from the trailer anyway. But the location setting is enough for me to get interested in it. And although I've not played it, I understand there's a level in one of the Call of Duty games which is based on Pripyat. You know, you can keep your Tenerife and all the rest of it. I'd rather go, you know, for a holiday around somewhere like that. I just find it fascinating, quite frankly. Number 10, we've got a new entry for Greater Glory, which has taken just under $2 million this week. And it's a chronicle of the Cristeros War from 1926 to 29, a war by the people of Mexico against the atheistic Mexican government. And starring Andy Garcia, Eva Longoria, Peter O'Toole, Catalina Sandino Moreno and Ruben Blades, I turned this trailer off halfway through. My God, it was dull. Clichés by the thousand and all the men chest-beating about how good was going to triumph, and I nearly fell asleep. Yeah, give that one a miss. Okay, we're going to have a bit of music, and then we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, including Rock of Ages with Tom Cruise. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and in this section we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Rock of Ages. Now, set in 1987 Los Angeles, Drew and Sherry are two young people chasing their dreams in the big city. When they meet, it's love at first sight, though their romance will face a series of challenges. It's a film adaptation of the 2006 Chris D'Arenzo comedy rock stroke jukebox Broadway musical of the same name. It stars country singer Julianne Hough and Diego Boneta with an ensemble cast including Tom Cruise, Russell Brand, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Paul Giamatti, Maylin Akerman, Bryan Cranston and with Alec Baldwin and Mary J. Blige. The film stars the music of Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, Def Leppard, Foreigner, Journey, Poison, Europe and Twisted Sister. And I don't really go in for musicals, and while Tom Cruise usually pulls out all the stops to do something different, I think this is one performance I'm going to give a miss. Some great music in there, so I think, but quite frank, I'd just rather listen to the music itself. But yeah, I'll give the film a miss, I think. Also this week we've got Cosmopolis. And riding across Manhattan in a stretch limo in order to get a haircut, a 28-year-old billionaire asset manager's day devolves into an odyssey with a cast of characters that start to tear his world apart. Starring Robert Pattinson, Samantha Morton, Sarah Gadon, Juliette Binoche, and another film with Paul Giamatti, the fact it's directed by David Cronenberg shows he has a touch that makes it look worth a watch, although I'm not convinced with Pattinson in the lead role of a film that just looks so damn weird. Also out this week is Police, or it's the French word of police, which is police with two S's instead of a C. Now, the daily grind for the cops of police department's juvenile protection unit, taking in child molesters, busting underage pickpockets, and chewing over relationship issues at lunch, interrogating abusive parents, taking statements from children, confronting the excesses of teen sexuality, enjoying solidarity with colleagues and laughing uncontrollably at the most unthinkable moments. Basically, it's knowing the worst exists and living with it. How do these cops balance their private lives and the reality they confront every working day? Well, as Fred, the group's hypersensitive wildcard, is going to have a hard time facing the scrutiny of Melissa, a photographer on a Ministry of the Interior assignment to document the unit. Filmed in France, this looks like it might be worth a watch, actually. The cast includes two stars of Braquo, namely Carol Rocher, who plays Roxanne Delgado, and Nicolas Duvauchel, who plays Theo Wachowski, also along with Marina Foy, who starred alongside Jean Reno in 22 Bullets, which the film was pretty so-so, but she and Reno were okay as they were. Yeah, I think it definitely looks worth a watch, quite frankly. What doesn't look worth a watch is Red Lights, where psychologist Margaret Matheson, Scorny Weaver, and her assistant study paranormal activity, which leads them to investigate a world-renowned psychic who has resurfaced years after his toughest critic mysteriously passed away. Also starring Cillian Murphy, Robert De Niro, Elizabeth Olsen, Toby Jones and Jolie Richardson. I just wasn't at all gripped by the trailer, which just looks way too over the top to have any interest. Give it a miss. Doesn't look at all interesting. Just Hollywood by numbers, quite frankly. And also out this week, we have a re-release of Jaws. Now, Amity Island had everything. Clear skies, gentle surf, warm water. People flocked there every summer. It was a perfect feeding ground. Well, this is one of the all-time classic movies in the history of cinema, with a Blu-ray release due in September. So this is your chance, for the first time in ages, to see the digitally restored... Well, the first time to see a digitally restored print on the big screen, but just the first time in ages to see it actually on the big screen anyway. So, yes, I think compared to all the rest, Rock of Ages, Cosmopolis, maybe. Police, I think Police probably looks the best one out of the new films. And Jaws, you know, if you want to see a re-release as well, go definitely and see that. Okay, so a bit of music, and then we'll look at the new DVDs. Before I say that, all the trailers for everything are on the... I think I forgot to mention this. On the Facebook page, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Nearly forgot that. So have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And this section, we'll have a look at some new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, starting with The Muppets. The Muppet domination continues with a hilarious new movie, it says here, from Walt Disney Studios. Jason Segel, Amy Adams and Chris Cooper join everyone's favourite Muppets and an all-star celebrity cast in a comic adventure for the whole family. While on vacation in Los Angeles, Walter, the world's biggest Muppet fan, his brother Gary and friend Mary uncover the diabolical plot of a greedy oil millionaire to destroy the Muppet Theatre. Now the Muppet-loving trio must reunite Kermit, Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear and their friends to stage the greatest Muppet telethon ever and save their beloved theatre. The gang is back together again in a must-own movie full of irresistible music and family fun. Bring home the biggest Muppet adventure ever. Yeah, I'm not going to see this one. No intention at the cinema, no intention on DVD or Blu-ray or anything. But if it's one for you, then there's some special features. There's the longest blooper reel ever made in Muppet history, asterisk, we think. Scratching the Surface, a hasty examination of the making of the Muppets. A little screen test on the way to the read-through. Deleted scenes, theatrical spoof trailers. And an audio commentary with Jason Segel, James Bobin and Nicholas Stoller. Also this week we have J. Edgar. And during his lifetime, J. Edgar Hoover would rise to be the most powerful man in America. As head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for nearly 50 years, he would stop at nothing to protect his country. Through 8 presidents and 3 wars, Hoover waged battle against threats both real and perceived, often bending the rules to keep his countrymen safe. His methods were at once ruthless and heroic, with the admiration of the world, his most coveted, if ever elusive, prize. Hoover was a man who placed great value on the secrets, particularly those of others, and was not afraid to use that information to exert authority over leading figures in the nation. Understanding that knowledge is power and fear poses opportunity, he used both to gain unprecedented influence and to build a reputation that was both formidable and untouchable. He was guarded in his private life as he was in his public one, allowing only a small and protective inner circle into his confidence. His closest colleague, Clyde Tolson, was also his constant companion. His secretary, Helen Gandy, who was perhaps most privy to Hoover's designs, remained loyal to the end and beyond. Only Hoover's mother, who served as his inspiration and conscience, would leave him, her passing truly crushing to the son who forever sought her love and approval. As seen through the eyes of Hoover himself, J. Edgar explores the personal and public life and relationships of a man who could distort the truth as easily as he upheld it during a life devoted to his own idea of justice, often swayed by the darker side of power. Now, watching the trailer, I know nothing about J. Edgar Hoover, and I still don't know a lot, but DiCaprio has proved himself a very watchable actor over the years, and Clint Eastwood doesn't often put a foot wrong, so I think this could be well worth a watch. Extras-wise, there's only one, it seems, just J. Edgar, the most powerful man in the world. So, pretty slim in extras terms. Then we also have The Safe House out this week, which is the kind of film where, for anyone who's seen the trailer, you can simply check your brain at the door. It's just really not a film about rocket science. And if you've not seen the trailer, then it's on the Facebook page, go to facebook.com/TVDFeverShow. Matt Weston, Ryan Reynolds, is a CIA agent who spends many dull days monitoring cameras in a safe house in Johannesburg with no house guests. That is, until the biggest badass of them all is ushered in. Enter Tobin Frost, Denzel Washington, who's handed himself into the authorities after a shady deal causes him to be tailored by some grumpy-looking baddies wanting to pop a cap in his bottom, led by a chap called Vargas. You know he's evil because he never smiles and he has a beard. And all this is fine for about 40 minutes or so, after which time things start to slow down for a while. And then there's some more action for a bit. And then there's a twist straight out of the Hollywood big book of twists. And then things meander for a bit longer, stalling occasionally. And then it ends. For a film with such a simple premise, get your words out, Dom, there is a confusing element in there. Not the machinations of the plot, but in how it was all put together in the way it was, and also in having a number of big names and failing to utilise their talents and letting them sleepwalk through the 2-hour running time. So yeah, definitely not one to recommend. There's better things out this week. I'd rather go see J. Edgar. But we'll see what else there is out this week. Have a bit of music, and then we'll look at some more Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back for the last section of the first hour of the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. And we're continuing our look at new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. Continuing with Man on a Ledge. And 20 stories up, wanted fugitive Nick Cassidy threatens suicide from a Manhattan rooftop. A sausage negotiator, Lydia Mercer, tries to talk him down. She discovers that Cassidy was convicted for his part in a multi-million-dollar diamond robbery. Whilst Cassidy creates the ultimate distraction, his brother and his feisty girlfriend are out to prove his innocence by committing a new crime. With an all-star cast that includes Sam Worthington, Elizabeth Banks, Anthony Mackie, Jamie Bell, Ed Harris and Edward Burns, it's this adrenaline-fueled action thriller will have you on the edge of your seat, it says here. Well, it looks intriguing at least, if not the best film you'll ever see this year, anyway. For those who want to buy it, special features include a featurette called The Ledge, a trailer with commentary by Elizabeth Banks, and also interviews with the crew. So, not a great deal in extras, quite frankly. Also out is Elizabeth, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and adapted from the acclaimed bestseller by Jonathan Safran Foer. The film is a story that unfolds from the inside the young mind of Oscar Schell, an inventive 11-year-old New Yorker whose discovery of a key in his deceased father's belongings sets him on an urgent search across the city for the locket will open. A year after his father died in the World Trade Center, on what Oscar calls the worst day, he is determined to keep his vital connection to the man who playfully cajoled him into confronting his wildest fears. Now as Oscar crosses the 5 New York boroughs in quest of the missing lock, encountering an eclectic assortment, get your words out, Dom, of people who are each survivors in their own way, he begins to uncover unseen links to the father he misses, to the mother who seems so far away from him, and to the whole noisy, dangerous, discombobulating world around him. And I saw the trailer, and it just like one of those just absolute, just one of those feel-good films. Everything's wonderful, despite the fact his dad's dead. And it's just like, oh, please, stop. It's horrible. Don't bother. If you do buy it, there's only one feature on this disc called Finding Oscar. Don't find him. Leave him to wherever he is. And also this week, we have the K9 Complete Box Set. The K9 The Complete Collection is TV's most loved robot dog, and K-9 blasts back into action via a space-time manipulator and arrives in the late 21st century in London, in a London scarred by alien intrusion and government rule through a cybernetic police force. K-9 is a cybernetic construct from the 50th century and has the appearance of an Earth dog, both in shape and size. He arrives at the home of Professor Griffin, a renowned cybernetics and temporal dynamics expert who is working on the alien space-time manipulator, STM, which opens a portal to anywhere in space and time. K-9 is following a group of rogue aliens, Jinx and warriors who attack Griffin, and a couple of teenagers. Also Starkey, a homeless rebel, and Georgie, a very capable, intelligent young girl. To save them, K-9 sacrifices himself and explodes, soon followed by his regeneration thanks to a strange alien device implanted in his mainframe. The new look K-9 can now hover and fly and has more capabilities than ever before. K-9 loses his long-term memory and begins a quest to not only protect humanity, but to discover more about his time and space travelling past. The year is 2059, and Earth has suffered at the hands of natural disasters, and the world governments have developed cybernetic technology and replaced human police and security forces with cybernetic civil pacification corps, who are controlled by the Sinister Department. The department itself have divisions run by inspectors who control public order and alien and paranormal activity. And alongside Griffin's errand boy, Darius, the teens are just destined to become K-9's companions in the battle against repression by the department and the ongoing intrusion by alien life forms. The series features many new and bizarre alien menaces from beyond time and space, as well as some evil homegrown human adversaries. And this is the American series that... I think it's been on Channel 5 or ITV and on Saturday mornings or something, but I saw a bit of it, and there's no Doctor Who obviously in it, but it just it was pretty poor actually. I think I'd rather watch K-9 and Company, even though I think they only lasted for one episode even. God. Also this week, some of the films are A Better Tomorrow 2012 and The Woman in the Fifth. Some TV series and other stuff. There's Andy Capp, the complete series with James Bolan. Curb Your Enthusiasm, Season 8. Entourage, Season 8. Lewis, Series 6. That's the most recent one. One Tree Hill, Season 9. Treasure Island, the complete series. That's the recent one with Eddie Izzard. Also Wallander, original films 1 to 6. There's also some Blu-ray premieres. There's Blue Velvet, Dune, Eraserhead, Lost Highway, Twin Peaks, Firewalk with Me, and there's also a David Lynch box set, which also includes Wild at Heart, which has been out before. There's a Kane Mutiny, The Expendables, the Extended Director's Cut. The original version was bad enough. New Year's Concert 2012, which is something that I really enjoyed. Well, obviously on New Year's Day, but it came out on DVD at the end of January, and it's now out on Blu-ray. And I don't know whether it's not something I'd buy and watch again, I think, because... Because quite frankly, you get your money's worth just watching it on the day, and it's just going to be pretty much the same tracks they play every year, year in, year out. If you've not seen it, it is worth a watch, but it's only going to be, you've waited 6 months for this, it's only going to be another 6 months before it's on again. Also we have Passport to Pimlico, The Sting Limited Edition Digibook, The Taking of Pelham 123, which is pretty good price. It's only on for about £7 on Amazon at the moment. Walking Tall and Yellow Submarine. Okay, so that's all everything to do with films for this week. And coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with a review of Max Payne 3. But to play us out to the top of the hour, we're going to have The Fall, There's a Ghost in My House, and this one goes out for Mike Plowman. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, that was a nice, soft, little romantic ditty by Rammstein called Zonna. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. And in this hour, we're going to start off with video games. I'm going to have a review of Max Payne 3 on the Xbox 360. Then we'll have the top 10 games charts, then some new video games releases, and finally some video games news. Then we move on to TV, where we'll have a look back at some TV in the past week. Such as Jimmy and the Giant Supermarket, The House That the 1950s Built, and Grayson Perry in a Dress again. And finally, a look ahead to some more programmes coming up in the coming week. So, it's all about video games for this first half hour, and we start off with a review of Max Payne 3. and Max Payne is a man with the worst luck in the world, even though it does make for one of my favourite game series ever. These days he's a gun for hire, and one that's addicted to painkillers, and in Sao Paulo, Brazil, protecting the family of a wealthy real estate mogul, Rodrigo Branco. But as is the way for Mr. Payne, everything goes wrong for him, and he's soon dodging bullets from baddies, using the unsurpassable features of bullet time, which causes everything to slow down, giving you more time to react, and also shoot dodge, where you can jump through the air, twisting about while you return fire. Now for myself, I just play single player campaigns, and this one spreads out over 14 chapters. But for those who enjoy going online, the multiplayer features maps and modes that dynamically change within a match, as well as reward, ranking and clan systems. You can also form private crews with friends, or join public crews. Players can be a member of up to five at the same time, and completing tasks as a crew will gain XP points for the player. There are also persistent feuds that see the player scrapping with opposing gangs who've killed someone on the team, while Social Club integration connects play across multiple titles, starting with Max Payne 3 and leading on to the forthcoming Grand Theft Auto 5 this summer. By playing both games, multiplayer crews that the player set up in one will be carried over to the other. Now, look at some downsides to the game. Well, loading times, for one. It takes an age to get back to the main menu, and the same goes for loading in a new level. Yes, there are graphic novel-type screens during this process, but when you've seen them before, you just want to get to where you're going. Gameplay-wise, it's a pain at times when you get shot and you've just killed a baddie in order to stay alive, which I'll explain in a moment, as you're often trapped in the thick of it, lying on the ground, and there's no easy way to scoot to the side to take cover. Max really can be rather a wally when it comes to trying to move him during tricky situations. Also, the game is way too hard on hard. Okay, so you expect hard. This is just bloody impossible. And Borderzone just drive me up the wall, taking the disc out of the Xbox and putting the game back on the shelf. I ended up restarting the game on mediums and selecting soft lock, which means your aim occasionally locks onto baddies, since free aim means you're just waving the gun about all over the place and wasting bullets instead of killing baddies, which doesn't look at all cool. And neither does getting your head blown off. Well, actually it does, but it doesn't help you progress through the game. Some things on the plus side. Despite going from one room to the next and so on, it doesn't feel linear, as there are bad guys all over the place, so there's plenty of ways to clear each area. This is especially the case if you put it on hard, and it takes several attempts to get to the next checkpoint. Also, as you're about to die, everything slows down, pointing you in the direction of the baddie who shot you. It gives you a chance to fire back and kill him, usually. If you can do it and you get it right, you'll be treated to a stylish final kill cam shot of him buying the farm, and you'll regain some of your energy. Oh, as well as staying alive. And despite any problems with moving about, the dark and engaging storyline and atmosphere pull you through, and in a lot of ways it's like playing John Woo's Stranglehold. Yes, that game did come out a few years ago, but my god, it is still one of the benchmarks for an awesome action experience. Why did they never make a sequel to that? Overall, Max is back, and while it's taken 9 long years, it is most certainly a welcome return. I just hope he doesn't leave it so long next time. Also, Rockstar have announced that through the year, seven downloadable add-on packs will be released via the PlayStation Network and Xbox Live. Players will be able to purchase DLC packs individually, or get an all-add-on content at a discounted rate of over 35% by purchasing a Rockstar Pass. Also, they released a free bonus downloadable multiplayer pack called Guerrilla Warfare. The pack includes a Guerrilla Mask, which gives extra adrenaline for melee kills from behind, the Lucky Coin, which gives extra cash when looting bodies, and the Booby Trap, for an item that booby traps corpses so that it explodes when looted. And also there's plenty of gaming footage from this. I'll stick it on the Facebook page, but you can also, if you go to youtube.com/DVDFeverGames, you'll see tons of video game levels and stuff like that on there, going back of the last few years. You probably notice I never get to finish most games. I either never finish them or I just never get the time to finish them, which is a bit of a shame, but there's still a lot of good stuff on there. Okay, so the scores on the doors. So the graphics and sound, 10. It's an instant 10. Gameplay, 7. It's not, it's got problems. It does have its problems. Enjoyment, though, 10. Overall, though, 9. So, yeah, it's not perfect, but, it's little problems that you can overcome. Okay, so a bad bit of music, and then we'll have the top 10 games charts and some new video games release is out next week. Oh, out this Friday, rather. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we're going to have a look at the top 10 games charts, first of all, starting with, well, obviously, number one, which is Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier. Number two, it's Max Payne 3, which you've just heard about. Number three, FIFA 12. Number four, Dragon's Dogma. Number five, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. That's still hanging in there. And number six, Sniper Elite V2. I've just got that for review, so I'll be bringing you a review of that shortly. Number seven, Dirt Showdown. Number eight, Battlefield 3. I brought you a review of that previously. Number nine, FIFA Street. And number 10, Prototype 2. Some new entries. Well, only one new entry in the top 40. There's Resistance, Burning Skies on the PlayStation Vita. And some re-entries. Number 31, Moshi Monsters, Moshling Zoo. Number 32, UFC Undisputed 3. Number 35, F1 2011. And number 39, Sniper Ghost Warrior. So, yeah, some new games we've got coming out this Friday. Start off with Lollipop Chainsaw, which focuses on zombie hunter and cheerleader Juliet Starling, voiced by Tara Strong in English, and there's various people in Japanese. And she fights hordes of zombies in San Romero High School, which Starling formerly attended. She carries with her the severed yet still living head of her boyfriend Nick, voiced by Michael Rosenbaum, who she decapitated after he suffered a zombie bite. It's also revealed that Juliet will be assisted by her sisters, Cordelia Starling, Linda Cardellini, used to be in ER, the elder one, and Rosalind Starling as the younger sister. The enemy zombies are led by a group of zombie rock and roll lords, who were former high school students who were turned into intelligent zombies. The zombie outbreak has been caused by Juliet's former classmate, an evil goth sorcerer named Swan, voiced by Sean Gunn. The Lollipop Chainsaw is a hack and slash game with gameplay resembling Suda51's No More Heroes games. In the game, Juliet has light attacks, which are acrobatic kicks and punches, and also heavy attacks, which she uses the chainsaw for. The light attacks are intended to herd enemy zombies together, so she can then finish them off all at once with heavy attacks. Killing enemies and saving classmates that are being attacked by zombies will fill up Juliet's star meter, which is used for super attacks. Juliet's boyfriend Nick, a disembodied head hanging from a skirt, can be used for various purposes, including being kicked at enemies by Juliet, or being put on the body of a decapitated zombie to control it. When the player completes certain tasks in the game, Juliet's chainsaw will be upgraded. Suda has also said that the gameplay might involve sound. Whatever that means. Because it's bloody noisy when you watch it. The gameplay shows you playing as an 18-year-old cheerleader, kicking seven shades of shinola out of zombies as well as shooting at them. It looks like it could be fun for a couple of hours, but that's about it. And I've put a couple of YouTube links on the DVD Fever page, so facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. One is of the gameplay, and the other is of a Zombie Gone live action trailer with Jessica Nigri, who is just a blonde bimbo in a cheerleader's outfit. Splattered with blood, if you like that sort of thing. Yes, you do, don't you? Anyway, next game, now we all get distracted for a moment, is Gravity Rush on the PlayStation Vita, which is an exciting new adventure that lets players get hands-on with the PlayStation Vita. Touch it, tap it, or tilt it to interact with the gameplay and hold the forces of gravity in your own two hands. A futuristic world is under attack from strange, unknown forces. Powerful gravity storms have started to appear in the sky, and nightmarish creatures are terrorising the population. Amidst the mayhem, a young girl named Kat wakes up, struggling to regain her lost memories. Only one thing seems certain. Kat has somehow gained a phenomenal new ability, the power to shift gravity. Features include, you can use the PlayStation Vita system's dual analogue sticks with pinpoint precision. You can freely explore a sprawling metropolis full of hidden secrets and dangers. You can take control of gravity with the PS Vita motion sensor function. You can use a touchscreen to flick through cutscenes like a real comic book. You can enjoy a distinctive art style with striking cel-shaded graphics. And it's directed by Kichito Toyama, creator of Siren on the PS2 and Silent Hill on the PS3. And I've linked a video to the Facebook page which shows some of the gameplay with superb cel-shaded graphics and fluid movements. But yeah, that's about all it shows, to be honest. It's only a very brief trailer. Also, some of the games out this week, there's Heroes of Ruin on the Nintendo 3DS, Duel Link Legends of Atlantis on the Nintendo DS, and clear my throat for this, because it's a game you've all been waiting for. Forget scantily clad teenagers in cheerleader outfits. You've now got, prepare yourself, Scania Truck Driver on the PC. Calm down. Are you sitting comfortably? Right. I know you're excited. You can drive through the city, drive through in a series of freeform missions that has you delivering the goods around a huge, intricately detailed 3D city. Pick the loads that appeal to you as you ferry freight around with complete freedom. Take the opportunity to learn more about the world's leading Scania trucks. I wonder if this is sponsored by Scania by any chance. With a unique opportunity and a virtual visit to their own demo centre, the place where Scania shows off its vehicles to VIP guests. Wow. Full internet connectivity allows you to upload your high scores and download the best result charts to see how you rank amongst the experts, or anyone else with nothing better to do than drive a bloody truck. Study the techniques used by the masters in downloadable replays and that both teach and inspire virtual Scania drivers. When you want to take a short break from the wheel, what better way than to visit the virtual gallery? A must-have for any Scania truck fan. There must be one at least. Feast your eyes on a vast gallery of Scania vehicles, photos and videos, and check out highlights from previous seasons. Young European Truck Driver Competition to whet your appetite as you strive to match the performances of the true masters of trucking. Careful how you say that. Hit the road in this superlative Scania simulation that will guarantee you want to keep on trucking. Yeah, we've had that joke already. Jesus Christ, it's just... Oh, God, it looks boring. I mean, the graphics look like something from 15 years ago. It's just absolutely appalling. It just looks boring as absolute hell. Do not buy this. There's a gameplay video on the Facebook page. I'm boring myself talking about it. I mean, they managed to go for a whole 10 minutes. So I lasted about 2 minutes before I switched it off. Anyway, if that's your thing, then there it is, Scania Truck Driver. Yeah, I put some gameplay footage on the Facebook page, but it does look almost as dull as Lee Carvello's putting challenge. Let's see who gets that in joke. Okay, we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have the video games news next. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show for the section we like to call, or I like to call, Video Games News. And this section, well, starts off with the first bit of news, where Epic Games has offered a first glimpse at its Unreal Engine 4 with a short tech demo. And the footage, which I'll stick on the Facebook page, shows off the technology's capacity for lighting and weather-changing techniques. Epic's current graphics teach Unreal 3 powers... Epic's current graphics tech, Unreal Engine 3, powers a host of modern console games, including the Gears of War and Mass Effect titles. It's also used in the Apple games Infinity Blade and its sequel. The company's keen to invest in new advancements in the console sector, with tablet and smartphone technology quickly gaining ground on home formats. Epic introduced Flash support to Unreal Engine 3 last year to enable developers to create high-quality browser games. Unreal Engine 4 has been in development since 2003, and its final build, scheduled for release in 2014, will target next-generation consoles. Now, a number of gamers might not remember the original Unreal, but it was an incredible first-person shooter which really set the benchmark for what was to come, and was as much a treat as Quake 1 and 2. Unreal 2 was also fantastic, but beyond that, and the same went for Quake, they look more towards multiplayer online gaming, which just isn't my bag, as I just get annihilated every 2 seconds. You know, I appear, I look round to see where everyone else is, I step forward, and I get shot. The end. Respawning in 3, 2, 1, and round it goes. Yeah, not my bag. The Wii U's full specifications and software launch schedule has been released by Nintendo. The console itself features 1080p HD video support, contains an IBM power-based multi-core CPU and an AMD Radeon-based high-definition GPU. It'll feature multiple video outputs, including HDMI, D-terminal, not quite sure what that one is, component video, RGB, and S-video, stereo AV, and just normal AV, which is pretty much like an Xbox 360. It's still a shame there's no video output on the PS Vita. Maybe there's an option for that, but I don't really want to, you know, put my money out for one of them unless I'm sure they are going to do that. It also use 6-channel PCM linear output via the HDMI connector or analog via the AV multi-out connector. The console measures 1.8 inches by 10.5 inches by 6.8 inches and will weigh approximately 1.5 kilograms. We also have the news that Carmageddon Reincarnation has secured the necessary funds to enter development. Stainless Games turned to Kickstarter in an attempt to raise $400,000. After 30 days, the final tally was $625,000, 156% of its original target. The game will now enter development and release on PC and Mac at a later date. Stainless co-founder Patrick Buckland said, "This result is way beyond our expectations and shows again how fantastic this crowdfunding model can be for the independent developer. We're so pleased to have been one of the band of pioneering video game studios on Kickstarter. It shows what a fantastic opportunity this is for both the indie studios and gamers alike. It joins games such as Double Fine Adventure and Wasteland 2 in successfully securing public funding. Announced in June last year, Carmageddon Reincarnation is a reboot for the over-the-top car combat series that originally sparked controversy in 1997, which is a game which I absolutely loved. The original was fantastic, the second one was a bit... I know the first one was kind of rough and ready. The second one, they tried to polish the graphics up, and it just didn't really quite work in the same way. But you know, it's just the way they program it. It's using instead of using sprites, they just use like polygons, and it just it lost the look that it had. Anyway, Stainless Games is planning a series of releases for Carmageddon Reincarnation, with the first release scheduled for February 2013 if the Kickstarter goal is met. Finally, we have the news that Facebook is going head-to-head with Apple and Google by launching its own App Store, offering a range of gaming, lifestyle and productivity applications on the social network. Well, they probably need some money since their shares have crashed and they're not actually earning anything anymore. The new App Center is part of the newly listed Facebook's bid to become an all-encompassing entertainment platform, both online and on mobile. Sticking with the social approach, the store is intended to make it easier for users to find apps that they can enjoy with friends. Facebook's 900 million members will be able to access a range of mobile and web apps, including Zynga's Draw Something, also Nike Plus GPS, and fellow social network Pinterest. I don't know, I've never played Draw Something, but I got the feeling that it's the kind of thing that had come and gone. You know, people had enjoyed it for a while and then they just went away from it. Me, I've been playing Words with Friends for ages. I lost interest in Angry Birds after a while. But Words with Friends, that's always new. I enjoy playing that one a great deal. New apps will include various games such as Jetpack Joyride, Ghosts of Misswood, and Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Commander, a spin-off of Ubisoft's popular video game series. The App Center is said to list only high-quality apps, based on the feedback from people who use the service, and users can browse the store and get personalized recommendations. Alongside Facebook's website, the App Store is also available on Facebook apps on the Apple iOS and Google Android, as Mark Zuckerberg's firm attempts to better exploit ever-growing mobile usage of its services. In a blog post announcing the App Center, Facebook's product manager for games, Matt Window, elaborated, "You can send apps you find on your computer to your mobile device using the new Send to Mobile feature. If a mobile app requires a download, you'll be sent to install it from the Apple App Store or Google Play," which is what the latter is what they now call it used to be called Marketplace on Android, and now they call it Google Play, which is just, it's a crap name, quite frankly. Windows said that every app in the App Store, the App Center, has screenshots and a detailed description, allowing users to learn more before installing it. Well, it bloody well should do, that's what they all do. Don't see what the big deal is there. This, he said, also helps with issues of privacy, a key problem affecting online services and the makers of applications. And if he says so. But he adds, it helps you control your privacy by showing the information an app needs and letting you choose to see who can see your activity on Facebook. If you decide you want to use an app, you can get started directly from the App Center. The App Center started rolling out to users in the US last week, launching with 600 apps, and will be made available to, quote-unquote, everyone in the, quote-unquote, coming weeks, said Facebook. You know, I'd just be happy if they just allowed me to view, by default, the desktop look of the site on my mobile. I hate the mobile version with a passion. It just really sucks. Anyway, that's enough of my gripes for now. In a moment, we'll have a look at some TV programmes in the past week, but first we'll have a bit of music. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And in this section, we move on to TV, where we first have a look at TV programmes watched in the past week. Now, my last show was 2 weeks ago, a preview of this before, which is Jimmy and the Giant Supermarket. It's the last episode on tonight, because there's only three. But, you know, but basically, the upshot of it is this. Animal welfare standards have come a long way in the UK, but most of the country's chickens are still reared intensively. 60% of pigs still spend their whole lives in sheds, and tens of thousands of dairy calves are needlessly slaughtered each year because it's too expensive to rear them. But in these cash-strapped times, a lot of customers can't afford to care about free-range food. Rare breed pig farmer Jimmy Doherty has a dream to make free-range food affordable for everyone. So he's challenged Britain's biggest supermarket, Tesco, to let him prove he can do it. And they've agreed. He's taking on three of Tesco's best-selling own brand products and will work with the company to try and make higher welfare versions available for the same affordable price. In the first episode, we learned that Tesco's own brand meatballs have 6 millimetres of fat compared to free-range veal ones, which he makes, which are 20% free-range, having 3 millimetres of fat on them. So he then made his own, you know, and he invited 400 members of the public to test them. And it all went so well, he took it to the head honchos at Tesco. They enjoyed them, but they were less enthusiastic about stocking them, as they didn't think veal was appetising, and also that it was mixed with things like oregano, which they didn't think customers would understand. We also learned that 90,000 male dairy calves are killed each year because there's no market for them as free-range food. So, sorry if you're eating your lunch at this point, but they're basically melted down as something called tallow and used to power a Belgian power station, which is a bit gross. Second programme was about taking on Tesco's best-selling sausage, and was also intriguing, and it also made their marketing bloke, Richard Stride, look like the most ignorant man on the planet. Jimmy got wide appreciation from members of the public for his sausage, if you'll pardon the expression. Meanwhile, old Dickie just basically goes, "Nah, what an absolute prat." Anyway, the final episode is on tonight at 9 o'clock, in which she looks at free-range chicken Kievs. And yeah, this whole series is well worth a watch. So if you miss the first two episodes, they'll be on 4OD. So yeah, definitely worth it watching it tonight at 9 o'clock. There's also All in the Best Possible Taste with Grace and Perry, which is on again tonight at 10 o'clock on Channel 4. Grace and Perry, one of Britain's leading artists and winner of the Turner Prize. Well, it doesn't take much to win the Turner Prize. One guy won with a load of elephant dung one year. Shows how moronic you have to be to vote in that. And he's always been fascinated by taste. Why people buy the things they do, wear the things they wear, and what they're trying to say about themselves when they make these choices. In this three-part series, Perry goes on safari through the taste tribes of Britain, not just to observe our taste, but also to tell us in an artwork what it means. The work he'll be creating is a series of 6 imposing tapestries called The Vanity of Small Differences. It's personal but panoramic tastes on the 21st century Britain. In each episode, he'll embed himself with people from across our social spectrum, the working classes of Sunderland, the middle classes of Tunbridge Wells, and the upper classes of the Cotswolds, in a bid to get to grips with our differing takes on taste. However, while I was watching it, I just thought, what exactly was this Grace and Perry programme about, other than him wearing a dress just slightly less often as normal? There's 2 more episodes to go if you care. I won't be watching them. I bailed on this one about 3/4 of the way through. I'm amazed I lasted that long. Finally, from the past week, we have The House That 1950s Built, which is on Channel 4 every Thursday at 9 o'clock. And I took to coincide with the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. Oh, wasn't that exciting? Not. Excuse me. The 4-part series celebrates science behind inventions and the innovations that transformed the way we used to live and catapulted an exhausted post-war country into the modernity of 1950s Britain. Engineer and showman Professor Brendan Walker sets out to discover the ingenuity and life-changing technology behind the inventions that took drab, black-and-white post-war Britain and launched it under its new young Queen Elizabeth II into a technical-drenched world of the future. Brendan learns from practical, hands-on experience exactly what it took to bring about the 50s revolution by reconstructing a house. Well, the first thing I noticed was that Brendan Walker has terrible sideburns. For the show itself, we saw that the 50s brought in the age of the fitted kitchen with Formica worktops, instead of having random units all over the place. There was also non-stick pans, Kenwood chef mixers that cost a month's salary, and the toll of having to do wash day on a washboard rather than a washing machine. Overall, it was okay, as it gave a flavour of what life was like, back then, you know, just showing why we wouldn't really want to go back to it. But I don't know whether I'm going to bother watching with a second episode, quite frankly. It was alright, but I think I just got the gist of it from one episode. Life's too short. Okay, so that's everything, well, from the past week or two. Now, before we have sort of look ahead at some programmes coming up the next week, I'm going to continue the like a guilty pleasures thing, which I've had I did once before, where we had the goodies and Funky Farm. This song, sort of in the blight of Eurovision the other week, this is the Eurovision contest winning entry for Denmark in 1975. It's by a band called Teach-In, and it's called Ding a Dong. Let me know what you make of this. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back for the final section of the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And this section we have a look at some TV programmes coming up in the coming week. And this week there's mostly just football on, which isn't my bag at all. That's if all the matches go ahead, as they can be pulled at any minute by the referees if the racism from moronic so-called fans continues. Anyway, the first thing was, there's quite a few things on this week. First thing we've got is Rhea, Diary of a Teen Transsexual, on Channel 4 tonight at 11.05. Now, the only description in it is, it says it's a one-off film that charts the up and downs of one of Britain's youngest transsexuals. And that's it for the description. See, that's all the description there is on the on DigiGuide and also on the 4OD page. So, I don't know. It's on tonight at 11.05. Have a look and see if it's worth a watch. Something else that may be worth a watch is A Short History of Everything Else, which is tomorrow night on Channel 4 at 10 o'clock. Where comedian Griff Rhys-Jones hosts this brand new comedy panel show using archived TV clips to challenge players to give a short history of everything else. Each week, Griff is joined by two regular team captains, Marcus Brigstock and Charlie Baker, I like Brigstock, but Charlie Baker, he's been on The Right Stuff and wasn't a big fan, to be honest. Who, along with guests Kirsty Walk and Mickey Flanagan, try to prove that they remember more about everything else than the other team, adding their own irreverent interpretations along the way. Mickey Flanagan, he just turns up on bloody everything. I'm a bit sick of him, to be honest. You know, I watch it. I think it's only four episodes, so it'll be quite quick and painless. Anyway, quick and painless. In fact, whatever the word is, we have Mock the Week Season 11, which starts on Thursday at 10 o'clock, where Dara O'Brien and regulars Chris Addison, Hugh Dennis and Andy Parsons return for another series of tropical mockery with guests Nathan Caton, Greg Davis and Mickey Flanagan. Mickey Flanagan again. Something that is new, completely new, is Dead Boss, which is on BBC Three Thursday at 10:30. Now, there's two episodes showing in the first week, back-to-back. It's a comedy murder mystery series. Helen Stevens is sent to prison for murdering her boss, managing director of Entirely Tiles. While she struggles to come to terms with the situation, those around her want to keep her inside. Margaret, the governor, hates appeals. Her sister Laura wants a flat. And her boyfriend and alibi, Justin, has disappeared. Helen not only has an incompetent lawyer, Tony, and an over-friendly cellmate to contend with, but she also has taken on Top Dog and the prison posse. Meanwhile, she receives some unexpected help from her colleague Henry. It's written by Sharon Horgan, and it's also Jennifer Saunders. Bloody hell, gave her a sex change. And we're back to the transsexual teen thing. Well, not teen for Jennifer Saunders anymore, obviously. Also Jeffrey McGiven, Bryony Hannah, Ashling B and Edward Hogg. So, I mean, it's written by Sharon Horgan, so it's certainly worth a watch for that, in that respect. And also on that note, I quite like a second series of, oh God, what was it called now? That one was on Channel 4, what's the name of it? The one with David Cross. You know the one I mean. It lasted about six or seven episodes, and it was going to clearly lead on to a second series, and that hasn't materialised as of yet. I don't even know if it's they're going to make a second series. And I've forgotten what the name of it is now anyway. I'll see if I remember before the end of the show. Also on this week, we have Louis Theroux with Twilight of the Porn Stars, which, well, I say it's on this week. It was on BBC Two on Sunday. I've not had a chance to watch it yet, but it's repeated on BBC HD this Thursday at 11 o'clock. And if you've not got BBC HD, it's also on the iPlayer. It will be already. And in 1997, Louis Theroux made a documentary about the world of male porn performers in Los Angeles. 15 years later, he returns to find a business struggling with a deluge of free porn on the internet. Louis revisits some of the original program's contributors, as well as meeting the latest crop of porn performers dreaming of porn stardom. So if you like porn on the internet, then that's your bag. Me, I don't know what pornography is. Anyway. God, the name of that program was just... It just popped back into my head when I was talking then, and now it's all disappeared again. I can't remember. Anyway, I know it had a really long title. Also on this week, a few films. We have Clute, which is a psychological thriller. I've never seen this before, so I might give it a watch. It's on BBC Two, Friday night, Saturday morning at 12:05 a.m. A small-town private eye's friend disappears, and the only clue is his connection with a call girl. While he tries to blackmail her into helping him find his friend, it appears that someone is stalking the call girl. Jane Fonda won an Oscar for a portrayal of a woman striving to avoid both destruction and dependence. Directed by Alan J. Pakula, and starring Jane Fonda, Donald Sutherland, Charles Coffey, Roy Scheider, Dorothy Tristan, and Rita Gam, that is Clute. Careful how you say that. Other films, there's The Young Victoria on Saturday, BBC Two at 9 o'clock. Don't think that's a premiere. I think it's only from 2009, but it might be one of those BBC Films film. So it's probably been on before. Patriot Games is on Channel 4, Saturday at 10:35. It's always worth a watch, even though it is about 20 years old now. Dawn of the Dead. No, that's the 2004 remake. That's on Channel 4 straight after Patriot Games at Saturday night, Sunday morning at 12:55 a.m. And it's... I don't know, it's... Usually you expect remakes to be really, really crap, but this one was... I really enjoyed it. And it's also one of those films, I won't say what happens, but, well, apart from, you know, the obvious, but it continues through the end credits as well. And it's basically kind of end credits that they just can't talk over because there's something going on throughout the whole thing, which is good because, you know, Red Bee Media, who do the continuity announcements for BBC and Channel 4, can simply quite go to hell. I can't stand them. They just shout over everything. Anyway... That's enough of my problems. Anyway, Dawn of the Dead. Yeah, it is a 2004 remake, but it is worth a watch. There's also My Sister's Keeper, which is... Was it 2008? 2008 remake? It doesn't seem that long ago, 2004. Maybe I'm... It's definitely the recent remake with Sarah Polley and Ving Rhames. Could be 2008, actually. Anyway, then we have My Sister's Keeper, which is on Channel 4 on Sunday at 9 o'clock, where writer and director Nick Cassavetes' drama, based on the best-selling novel by Jodie Picoult, raises interesting ethical and legal questions. 11-year-old Anna Fitzgerald and her family tell, in flashbacks, the story of her older sister Kate's diagnosis of leukemia and her mother Sarah's and father Brian's decision to conceive a genetically engineered daughter for the express purpose of donating body parts to Kate. When Kate desperately needs a kidney, Anna decides that she doesn't want to donate hers and goes to the lengths of hiring a lawyer, Campbell Alexander. Campbell Alexander, is that... It's like a reverse of a bad politician's name. Anyway, he hires a lawyer in a quest for medical emancipation from her family. Anna's decision sends shockwaves through the family, with angry Sarah eventually taking their fight to court. Don't know if it sounds massively exciting. It's got Abigail Breslin, Walter Rainey, Sophia Vasileva, Cameron Diaz, Heather Walquist, and Jason Patrick. But I mention it because Jodie Picoult was recently on BBC Breakfast making Bill and Susanna howl like wolves. Oh, that was superb. I enjoyed that. I put that on the Facebook page for you to enjoy. Still, for now, that's everything, though, for this week. And thanks to everyone who's listened. And check out all the trailer links and the gaming footage for on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And I'll be back for next week for some more movies, games, and TV. So we're going to finish with a song, and this one's for Simon Jenkin. It's Earl Oaken with the cover of Teenage Dirtbag. This is 106.6.
106.6.